Chapter 11. The issue of the plots. The death of Thomas, 3rd Viscount of Castlewood, and the imprisonment of his Viscountess. At first my lady was for dying like Mary, Queen of Scots, to whom she fancied she bore a resemblance in beauty, and, stroking her scraggy neck, said, "They will find Isabel of Castlewood as equal to her fate." Her gentlewoman, Victor, persuaded her that her prudent course was, as she could not fly, to receive the troops, as though she suspected nothing, and that her chamber was the best place wherein to await them. So her black japan casket, which Harry was to carry to the coach, was taken back to her ladyship's chamber, whither the maid and mistress retired. Victor came out presently, bidding the page to say her ladyship was ill, confined to her bed with the rheumatism. By this time the soldiers had reached Castlewood. Harry Esmond saw them from the window of the tapestry parlor. A couple of sentinels were posted at the gate, a half dozen more walked towards the stable, and some others, preceded by their commander, and a man in black, a lawyer probably, were conducted by one of the servants to the stair leading up to the part of the house which my lord and lady inhabited. So the captain, a handsome kind man, and the lawyer, came through the anteroom to the tapestry parlor, and where now was nobody but young Harry Esmond, the page. "Tell your mistress, little man," says the captain, kindly, "that we must speak to her." "My mistress is ill abed," said the page. "What complaint has she?" asked the captain. The boy said, "The rheumatism." "Rheumatism. That's a sad complaint," continues the good-natured captain. "And the coach is in the yard to fetch the doctor, I suppose?" "I don't know," says the boy. "And how long has her ladyship been ill?" "I don't know," says the boy. "When did my lord go away?"
"Yesterday night."
"With Father Holt?"
"With Mr. Holt."
"And which way did they travel?" asks the lawyer.
"They traveled without me," says the page.
"We must see Lady Castlewood." "I have orders that nobody goes into her ladyship. She is sick," says the page. But at this moment Victor came out.
"Hush," says she, and, as if not knowing that anyone was near, "what's this noise?" says she.
"Is this gentleman the doctor?"
"Stuff, we must see Lady Castlewood," says the lawyer, pushing by. The curtains of her ladyship's room were down, and the chamber dark, and she was in bed with a nightcap on her head, and propped up by her pillows, looking none the less ghastly, because of the red which was still on her cheeks, and which she could not afford to forego.
"Is that the doctor?" she said.
"There is no use with this deception, madam," Captain Westbury said, for, so he was named, "why duty is to arrest the person of Thomas, Viscount Castlewood, a nonjuring peer of Robert Tusher, Vicar of Castlewood and Henry Holt, known under various other names and designations, a Jesuit priest, who officiated as chaplain here in the late king's time, and is now at the head of the conspiracy which was about to break out in this country against the authority of their majesties King William and Queen Mary, and my orders are to search the house for such papers or traces of the conspiracy as may be found here. Your ladyship will please give me your keys, and it will be as well for yourself that you should help us, in every way, in our search. You see, sir, that I have the rheumatism, and cannot move," said the lady, looking uncommonly ghastly as she sat up in her bed, where, however, as he had her cheeks painted, and a new cap put on, so that she might at least look her best when the officers came. "I shall take leave to place a sentinel in the chamber, so that your ladyship, in case you should wish to rise, may have an arm to lean on," Captain Westbury said. "Our woman will show me where I am to look," and Madame Victor, chattering in her half-French and half-English jargon, opened while the captain examined one drawer after another, but, as Harry Esmond thought, rather carelessly, with a smile on his face, as if he was only conducting the examination for form's sake. Before one of the cupboards Victor flung herself down, stretching out her arms, and, with a piercing shriek, cried, "None, Jamais, Monsieur l'Officier. Jamais. I will rather die than let you see this wardrobe. But Captain Westbury would open it, still with a smile on his face, which, when the box was opened, turned into a fair burst of laughter. It contained not papers regarding the conspiracy, but my lady's wigs, washes, and rouge pots, and Victor said men were monsters, as the captain went on with his perquisition. He tapped the back to see whether or no it was hollow, and as he thrust his hands into the cupboard, my lady from her bed called out, with a voice that did not sound like that of a very sick woman, "Is it your commission to insult ladies as well as to arrest gentlemen, Captain? These articles are only dangerous when worn by your ladyship," the captain said, with a low bow and a mock grin of politeness. "Have found nothing which concerns the government as yet, only the weapons with which beauty is authorized to kill," says he, pointing to a wig with his sword tip. "He must now proceed to search the rest of the house." "You are not going to leave that wretch in the room with me," cried my lady, pointing to the soldier. "What can I do, madam? Somebody you must have to smooth your pillow and bring your medicine. Permit me, sir," screamed out my lady. "Madam, if you are too ill to leave the bed," the captain then said, rather sternly, "I must have in four of my men to lift you off in the sheet. I must examine this bed. In a word, papers may be hidden in a bed as elsewhere. We know that very well, and asterisk, asterisk, asterisk." Here it was her ladyship's turn to shriek, for the captain, with his fist shaking the pillows and bolsters, at last came to earn, as they say in the play of forfeits, and wrenching away one of the pillows, said, "Look, did not I tell you so? Here is a pillow stuffed with paper. Some villain has betrayed us," cried out my lady, sitting up in the bed, showing herself full dressed under her night rail. "And now your ladyship can move, I am sure. Permit me to give you my hand to rise. You will have to travel for some distance, as far as Hexton Castle tonight. Will you have your coach? Your woman shall attend you, if you like, and the Japan box?" "Sir, you don't strike a man when he is down," said my lady, with some dignity. "Can you not spare a woman?" "Your ladyship must please to rise, and let me search the bed," said the captain. "There is no more time to lose in bandying talk." And, without more ado, the gaunt old woman got up. Harry Esmond recollected to the end of his life that figure, with the brocade dress and the white night rail, and the gold clock red stockings, and white red-heeled shoes, sitting up in the bed, and stepping down from it. The trunks were ready packed for departure in her anteroom, and the horses ready harnessed in the stable. About all which the captain seemed to know, by information got from some quarter or other, and when Esmond could make a pretty shrewd guess in after times, when Dr. Tusher complained that King William's government had basely treated him for services done in that cause. And here he may relate, though he was then too young to know all that was happening, what the papers contained, of which Captain Westbury had made a seizure, and which papers had been transferred from the Japan box to the bed when the officers arrived. There was a list of gentlemen of the county in Father Holt's handwriting, Mr. Freeman's, King James, friends, a similar paper being found among those of Sir John Fenwick and Mr. Copplestone, who suffered death for this conspiracy. There was a patent conferring the title of Marquis of Esmond on my Lord Castlewood, and the heirs male of his body, his appointment as Lord Lieutenant of the county, and Major General. Asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. To have this rank of Marquis restored in the family had always been my Lady Viscountess's ambition, and her old maiden aunt, Barbara Topham, the goldsmith's daughter, dying about this time, and leaving all her property to Lady Castlewood, I have heard that her ladyship sent almost the whole of the money to King James, a proceeding which so irritated my Lord Castlewood, that he actually went to the parish church, and was only appeased by the Marquis's title which his exiled majesty sent to him in return for the 15,000 L. his faithful subject lent him. There were various letters from the nobility and gentry, some ardent and some doubtful, in the king's service, and, very luckily for him, two letters concerning Colonel Francis Esmond. One from Father Holt, which said, "I have been to see this colonel at his house at Walcott, near to Wells, where he resides since the king's departure, and pressed him very eagerly in Mr. Freeman's cause, showing him the great advantage he would have by trading with that merchant, offering him large premiums there as agreed between us. But he says no. He considers Mr. Freeman the head of the firm, will never trade against him, or embark with any other trading company, but considers his duty was done when Mr. Freeman left England. This colonel seems to care more for his wife and his beagles than for affairs. He asked me much about young H.E., that bastard, as he called him, doubting my lord's intentions respecting him. I reassured him on this head, stating what I knew of the lad, and our intentions respecting him, but with regard to Freeman he was inflexible. And another letter was from Colonel Esmond to his kinsman, to say that one Captain Holton had been with him offering him large bribes to join, you know who, and saying that the head of the House of Castlewood was deeply engaged in that quarter. But for his part he had broke his sword, when the K left the country, and would never again fight in that quarrel. The P.O. was a man, at least, of a noble courage, and his duty, and, as he thought, every Englishman's, was to keep the country quiet, and the French out of it. And, in fine, that he would have nothing to do with the scheme. Of the existence of these two letters, and the contents of the pillow, Colonel Frank Esmond, who became Viscount Castlewood, told Henry Esmond afterwards, when the letters were shown to his lordship, who congratulated himself, as he had good reason, that he had not joined in the scheme which proved so fatal to many concerned in it. But, naturally, the lad knew little about these circumstances, when they happened under his eyes. Only being aware that his patron and his mistress were in some trouble, which had caused the flight of the one, and the apprehension of the other by the officers of King William. The seizure of the papers effected, the gentlemen did not pursue their further search through Castlewood House very rigorously. They examined Mr. Holt's room, being led thither by his pupil, who showed, as the father had bidden him, the place where the key of his chamber lay, opened the door for the gentlemen, and conducted them into the room. When the gentlemen came to the half-burned papers in the brazier, they examined them eagerly enough, and their young guide was a little amused at their perplexity. "What are these?" says one. "They're written in a foreign language," says the lawyer. "What are you laughing at, little whelp?" adds he, turning round as he saw the boy smile. "Mr. Holt said they were sermons," Harry said, "and bade me to burn them," which indeed was true of those papers. "Sermons indeed, it's treason, I would lay a wager," cries the lawyer. "Egad, it's Greek to me," says Captain Westbury. "And you read it, little boy?" "Yes, sir, a little," Harry said. "Then read, and read in English, sir, on your peril," said the lawyer. And Harry began to translate. "Hath not one of your own writers said, 'The children of Adam are now laboring as much as he himself ever did, about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, shaking the boughs thereof, and seeking the fruit, being for the most part unmindful of the tree of life?'" Apostrophe, apostrophe, O blind generation! "'Tis this tree of knowledge to which the serpent has led you," and here the boy was obliged to stop, the rest of the page, being charred by the fire, and asked of the lawyer, "All I go on, sir?" The lawyer said his boy is deeper than he seems. Who knows that he is not laughing at us? "Let's have in Dick the scholar," cried Captain Westbury, laughing. And he called to a trooper out of the window, "Oh, Dick, come in here and construe." A thick-set soldier, with a square good-humored face, came in at the summons, saluting his officer. "Tell us what is this, Dick," says the lawyer. "My name is Steele, sir," says the soldier. "Maybe Dick for my friends, but I don't name gentlemen of your cloth amongst them." "Well then, Steele." "Mr. Steele, sir, if you please. When you address a gentleman of His Majesty's Horse Guards, be pleased not to be so familiar.
I didn't know, sir, said the lawyer.
How should you? I take it, you are not accustomed to meet with.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.